Since the internet became a self-supporting industry in 1995, broadband has become analogous to a public utility. It's a near necessary component of starting a new business, expanding commerce and government services, boosting economic and job growth, and modernizing education and health care. Yet access to advanced broadband services remains a problem for some 39% of rural America still struggling to catch up, compared to just 10% of the country at large. In an effort to help close that gap in the Upper Peninsula, Northern Michigan University has embarked on a project to expand high-speed educational internet access across the entire region. We'll talk about how the project came about, what expansion entails, and what it means for schools, students, and communities, just ahead on MediaMeet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are Northern Michigan University Vice President for Finance and Administration, Gavin Leach, and Vice President for Extended Learning and Community Engagement, Steve Vandenhoven. Welcome.
Thank you.
Nationwide, many rural communities and especially tribal communities have yet to close the gap in broadband access. From what you've learned, what's the picture for the Upper Peninsula?
Well, the picture is very similar for the UP. It's been a struggle, I think, for many communities. This past year, I served on the Governor's 21st Infrastructure Commission, and we did two local town-gown type forums to listen to community needs. And it was interesting that broadband was one of the top needs that we heard at both of the sessions that we had in the UP, both in Escanaba and Marquette, which had people coming from all over the UP to discuss what their concerns were and infrastructure needs across the UP. Right. And as we looked at data through the commission hearings on, I was in the communications subcommittee, is it's 25% plus of the UP has no internet. And you look beyond that and people have limited or low speed broadband access.
Okay, so it's approaching but not quite as high as the general need across the country, you're saying, for
it's very areas. Similar, and it varies throughout areas in the UP.
Okay.
And you have some real rural communities that have nothing at all, and they have nobody to talk to them about it. And those are people we've heard from pretty regularly over the years, and help lead to where we're going in the direction that we are now.
Good. Some have identified high-speed broadband as near critical infrastructure, something analogous to a public utility, as I mentioned. Gavin is a member of the Governor's Commission on Infrastructure. Where does the need for internet access rank among commissioners right now? That is, as a statewide.
I think as a statewide, it was pretty unanimous about the need and the criticality for all the communities throughout the region. You look at the services that are coming as we move forward, both from an educational standpoint, which is our focus, but also in other types of services that are going to occur. The health industry is transforming. You have rural health needs where people are going to access medical care remotely.
And Medicaid.
You need that, Medicaid. And you need that ability to have that access to conduct business, these small communities. You know, the ones that I have talked to, you know, talk about their communities dying without that access because they need to attract people to stay there to be able to produce business. And they can actually utilize the internet to help expand their small businesses within their rural regions, and so it's a critical need, I think, not only in the UP but throughout the state, especially in the rural communities throughout the state of Michigan.
How about tribal communities? They seem to be with 39% of rural America still struggling to catch up. It's over 40 for tribal communities, I think.
Yeah, and we've in the UP, we've been reaching out to some of those communities, and they'd be part of our target as far as trying to reach those communities from, and again, that we focus on the educational side, but I think it's a need, whether it's the educational broadband or other types of broadband for their areas, I think it's critical for them also.
Okay. In 2000, NMU became the first to issue laptop, or one of the first to issue laptop computers to students. adapt educational resources and methods to their use and become the first to deploy its own WiMAX computer network. Was it perceived at that time that this would be a prologue to regional broadband expansion?
Not at that time. I have to say, I was there at the start, and remember in 98 we actually did our first pilot with the laptop program, and we were one of the first public universities to include it as part of their tuition and fees for the students. And then wireless wasn't even mainstream at that point. It was sort of a new technology that wasn't really out there, and it was about 3 years later that wireless started to come into play. And so, we provided equal access. Our focus of the initiative was for our students to have equal access to equal technology. Okay. And that sort of has been our underlying theme as we've moved throughout this entire process, including equal access to equal broadband. That sort of plays off of the original mission and target of putting that initiative in place. But you started with students having it on campus, they had wired access, then they wanted wireless. Mm-hmm. So we started wireless in all the buildings. Once they had it in the buildings, we have about 6,000 students that don't live on campus. And so the problem was they would go home and they would need access from their homes. And so we looked at different technologies to try to reach them. Originally, we looked at hotspots with Wi-Fi, and there was a lot of line of sight issues, and it wasn't very reliable.
Oh, sure. Right.
And eventually, we found the technology WiMAX that worked for us and worked for our students. And we were able then to start it up in Marquette and spread it out into pockets where we identified our students lived in local areas, Gwinnett, Chemehuevin, Negaunee, Big Bay. And so then we targeted to reach those communities, to reach our students when they were home and away from campus so they could get access back to educational materials.
All right. So when did this regional broadband expansion thing start to take off?
I think it's been building. We've had other communities talking to us over time, asking how we could assist them. We've been looking at ways to expand. Steve's been leading up in Northern Promise and working with other communities on concurrent enrollments. We looked at the need that happened through the Infrastructure Commission and, the rural communities in the UP needing access. And all of it sort of came together. And Steve may be able to expand on the Northern Promise and things we're doing in that area. But it really coalesced into a way that we felt like, through the demand we were hearing, and our goal to really help educate the UP and be that central point for educational access, educational reach in the Upper Peninsula, and really help in our public service role of improving the Upper Peninsula. I think it really all came about and came together in this overall plan. And maybe Steve can expand off that a little.
Sure. We've been trying to provide more opportunities for high school students to get some college credit under their belts before they graduate from high school. So we have dual and concurrent enrollment programs. And one of the ways that we serve those students is to make sure that they're connected with the unit. These are regular university classes, whether they're taking them online or whether they're taking them in their high school from a university-approved adjunct instructor.
And they're being taken by people who are presented by people who are competent in that field.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely. Or some of them come to campus. If they're close enough, they come to campus. But just as Gavin said, the WiMAX program was a program meant to make sure that our students could stay connected with the university and the educational experience even when they weren't on campus. And so the same applies to a high school student who happens to be taking a university course. We needed a way to make sure that they could stay connected with the university when they weren't physically on campus. And so as we've built this out, there's a natural tie already to the K-12 community because of some of the things we're doing in terms of dual and concurrent enrollment. And so as we've partnered with the K-12 community, we sort of started with those existing relationships we had through dual and concurrent enrollment.
Okay. Now, as I understand it, WiMAX is now obsolete for the purposes of the expansion, and you've moved to what's called an LTE or long-term evolution technology. What's the difference there?
It was sort of an evolution of where the technology was going, and you had different industries supporting what was a WiMAX technology and other LTE, and I think it was a situation more that the big telcos wanted to go in the LTE direction. It has a different type of control feature to it. Right. And so it started to drive the direction of the technology. And so ultimately, it was sort of that next step in the evolution that we then changed over from WiMAX to LTE. And it was a pretty easy transition for us. Technically, there's a little more complication there, but it was really an.
Have to start over.
It didn't have to start from scratch. We had the expertise, and we have great technical people at the university, and they were able to really put together a solid plan on how to transition that, and it worked pretty smooth.
Okay, this is all a component of Northern's Educational Access Network. That's the official name, I believe, which is available to any student pursuing NMU coursework. As I understand it, that includes regular NMU students, those that partner high schools offering dual enrollment, you mentioned, continuing education and professional development enrollees, and just lifetime learners generally, right?
Correct.
This is being offered as a subscription service. How so, and where are you so far in rolling that out?
We started up as a... is basically that's your access to the education. As part of that, you get our network access. So you can buy into that and not receive the broadband if you don't want to. And mm-hmm. So we really wanted to make it accessible from a broad range of people. And the K-12, we've had a good relationship with them. I've met with the UP superintendents a number of times and talked to them. So we led with the Northern Promise schools, but we've also opened it up to all the K-12s. And it's really of making sure that their students have the opportunity to have that access. And we partnered first with Marquette because we actually helped them run their network, and they were doing a one-to-one computing program with their students. But their students would go home and not have the access, and so that's how we started talking to them, and we decided to roll it out on a test basis with them before we started going out to the other schools. And one of the stories that we heard in going through that process was a mother who used to have to drive into McDonald's 3 days a week and sit there and do homework with her daughter so that they could have internet access rather than being at home with the
big
child.
Big homework gap there, I understand, for a lot of students who might have access while they're at school, and then they go to their communities and they can't even get they can't get online to get the materials they need.
Yeah, so we built it off of that. We built a model in which it's trying to make it as affordable as possible to people. Mm-hmm. Paying by semester was difficult, so we looked at a monthly rate. So it sort of evolved from there. And, as you build these things out, you have some trials that you do. And,
sure.
And it really built into, I think, the model that we're at now. Where you can sign up and you have access to, Steve is working on growing our courses out there. We're hopefully 25 this year, and he can speak a little bit more about what those will be.
Okay.
But it really will give you a menu of courses, and if you're enrolled in an NMU degree course, it's included as part of your regular tuition and fees already, too.
Already.
So it has it really is reaching out on education and ensuring people have access to it.
The rates, as I, when I reviewed them, seem to be pretty competitive. You're not trying to become another broadband provider, right?
Absolutely not. Our focus is education, and that's where we've been from the beginning. We've been doing that since 2011. We've been reaching out in Marquette Community to our students, and there's other providers locally, and we do not compete with them and don't plan to. And again, it's you have required that you need to take a module or a course each year. We want to ensure that people do that, and we also want to ensure that we reach out and provide them with as many opportunities as they can. It's unlimited, the amount of courses and modules they take during a year, so they can take one to eventually hopefully 50, and again, a little bit I sure you'll ask Steve about what those things will be.
I could see a lot of self-motivated learners feeling kind of constrained if they were just merely confined to a module or two. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, Gavin makes a good point in that, as a public institution of higher education, we think it's our obligation to provide people access to the educational programs that we have. And so this is a vehicle for doing it. And as you said, the EAN is not just the network. The Educational Access Network means all the programs that we have and educational experiences we have and the LTE network to get students to those educational experiences. So the LTE is the way to get to what we're focusing on, and that's the education.
Okay. To fund the expansion, NMU was awarded a $6.5 million grant or loan from the Michigan Strategic Fund and will provide a $3.2 million match out of subscriptions. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Obviously, the state sees a benefit for economic development, perhaps state-supported programs like the one you mentioned, the Upper Peninsula Health Plan, mm-hmm. Medicaid plan. How is the amount determined? It seems pretty modest for building out a regional system.
Yeah, it is fairly modest, but we've been doing this since 2011, and what we're doing is leveraging some of the core technologies that we have in place already.
Okay.
And then we've really narrowed it down on how to really efficiently put what they call ENOBs and antennas and stuff throughout communities. And so we have a pretty good handle on those costs as we've had that experience over time. We also partner with local communities on using existing public infrastructure, which helps keep the cost down.
You must be pretty good at spotting the assets that are already there.
And so we utilize those. So that was a lot of our analysis up front. And then we also help those communities in connecting their city facilities. As we move into them, we provide them some assistance in that regard also. So it's create a true partnership, help the communities, and utilize other infrastructure to help keep the costs down in putting this in place. So,
okay. Speaking of costs, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Division, among many of the grants it offers, includes things for these sorts of purposes. The UP has benefited for decades from programs like this. Any consideration of grants for that source when you were planning?
We've been looking for those. Mm-hmm. Those opportunities haven't been in great abundance now. However, we will continue to look at those types of programs as we continue to move forward with the project.
In terms of federal stuff, too, the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, asked to sign off on this. Any big hurdles there, or was this just a formal sort of thing?
Well, how this went about is when we originally did it, when we went to WiMAX, we had to receive a license to broadcast because it's a licensed spectrum over which the signal broadcasts.
Okay.
And so once we did that, you need to show that you have substantial service within a region and proof of concept.
All right.
And so we went out and from doing that, we showed them what we've done, where we're doing it, and talk to them about the idea of building it out broader throughout the UP. Now, nobody else was using that spectrum throughout the entire Upper Peninsula.
That helps.
So we brought to them this concept and idea, and they ended up supporting it, providing us with the licensed spectrum throughout the UP, which enables us to be able to deliver the service.
Okay. The EAN plan reportedly is to connect over 60 communities, 60 municipalities, townships, and cities across the region over the next couple of years. Who are the partners you worked with in launching the system? Is it are we talking mayors and economic development people, schools,
all sorts, all the above?
Okay.
We have talked to the UP superintendents. We've talked to communities. Each community we go into, we sign an agreement with on how we'll use it, accessing their infrastructure. We talked to Superintendent Steve's always talking to him. I've talked to them a number of times. Some economic development authorities have contacted us that we've met with, and it's really all of the above because it's really a UP need that we're trying to help solve here.
Okay, especially since the announcement of the MEDC loan, there have been dozens of communities, and they come from all over. Ranging from the mayor to the local economic development folks, to business folks, to superintendents and education people as well.
Okay. We're talking about the Educational Access Network with Northern Michigan University Vice President for Finance and Administration, Gavin Leach, and Vice President for Extended Learning and Community Engagement, Steve Vandenhoven. We mentioned sharing assets. There's another asset that's already there, as I understand it. Technology developers are always talking about good fiber to pull this sort of thing. How might that apply to this project?
Well, you need fiber for backhaul service, and so we need to have fiber near a tower or one of the infrastructures. And so we work with both the Michigan Education Network, as well as with local providers on the backhaul. And What we've done is, in areas where that fiber isn't readily available, is we'll do radio shots from one site to another site in order to be able to make that connection work. And so we've had experience doing that already.
Okay.
We can carry that experience into other communities.
But you've got to step this across the entire UP. Any gaps there?
No, we've looked at where the fiber runs, and we're pretty confident on the direction we can take across. You know, there's a good fiber run going across US-2, across M-28. Then you have spurs that run off of those that we can, if there's not fiber running off the spur, you know, we can pay for a spur, or you can radio shot it from a certain distance. You know, you can go 20, 30 miles on a distance on some of the radio shots. 20 is preferable. You don't really want to be over that. But if you have great line of sight, it could probably potentially travel further in that regard.
And this will be built out strategically. So where there are few people and more deer than there are people, those will be the last places to be covered.
Right. That's a good point, Steve.
The expansion is interesting here. Right now, currently, the system, if you count connections already with Houghton,
right,
and things in Marquette County, you've got about 9,000 students over 3,000 square miles. You want to bring that. The potential is for 60,000 students, perhaps more, over nearly 22,000 square miles. That's is that a ballpark right there?
That's a good ballpark. Again, how we targeted the communities, just so you're aware, is we looked at every community that had a school in it.
Okay.
And that was how we came up with the 64 communities.
Any Google mapping?
A lot of Google mapping.
A lot of Google mapping. That's what I thought. The potential is greater, for students when you count non-traditional students and defined learning programs, not to mention creation of new learning opportunities. And I imagine you're probably up your waist in that, right?
Yes. I mean, really the definition between a non-traditional student and a traditional student is kind of blurring in that traditional students are now using wireless access and using the internet to access their education. And so, the potential for the system lies not only in your traditional on-campus students to make sure they can stay connected with their campuses, but it does lie in the non-traditional learners, both in terms of being able to access NMU's degree programs and credential programs or personal and professional development. So we've created something called the Global Campus, was started last fall, and the Global Campus is degree programs or credit programs, including certificates, that someone can access through the EAN. It comes as part of their regular tuition. Access to the network comes as part of their tuition. And so they have access to all the academic programs that NMU offers, as much as anyone who lives near the university.
Okay.
But there's a whole slew of folks who may not want to take modules or educational experiences for credit. And those are the people interested in our personal and professional development offerings.
Yeah.
And that we're seeing quite a bit of demand for that.
It seems to me there would be, as the United States, rural areas tend to be losing population. The Upper Peninsula is no exception, but people working in those areas need a lot of advanced help, in terms of training and that sort of thing. So this would seem to answer that need considerably, right?
Absolutely. I mean, our concern really isn't why people want access to educational experiences. We're more concerned about that they do, and we want to be able to provide them the educational experiences that they want and not make them drive any distance in order to get them. So we've been talking recently about providing services to people who might need education in managing diabetes, as an example, and proper nutrition and exercise and monitoring of symptoms and medication administration, and working with some of the healthcare providers to make sure that people who live in rural communities have that education and aren't required to travel a distance to get it.
Okay. So let's talk about one of the bedrock rules is you have to take at least one module a year. That's right, educational module. And we just mentioned, we're busy trying to, Steve's busy trying to fill in the other course modules that might be available in the next couple of years. What are you looking at for subject matter? You've mentioned these, which seem to be kind of a public service sort of thing. What about course modules for academic credit? Are these particularly difficult to design?
Well, yeah, they are difficult to design. Online teaching is a whole other ball of wax than face-to-face teaching. But we have a strong team of instructional designers at the university that help with that process. And that's really what the Global Campus is all about, to deliver, you know, credit-bearing academic courses. We also have people who are the course designers who are helping out with the personal and professional development offerings. And those can range from very unacademic topics like, exercise and to much more applied and academic topics like economics and financial fitness and everything in between.
Okay. What's the most unusual or least predictable application you've encountered in discussions on this system?
In terms of the content of the courses, well, we're talking now about someone who has experience in world-class Texas Hold'em.
Oh, wow.
Of offering an online module in Texas Hold'em. So, or
different kind of economic.
Yeah, exactly. We want to make sure that that the content of the modules fits with the mission and vision of the university. But beyond that, we want to make sure to give people educational experiences that they want.
Okay. What seems to be the timeline in accomplishing the full rollout of this system? We've got about a minute.
Okay.
Where can we expect to expand first?
Well, we have 22 communities identified. We have already, in the next 3-4 weeks, we're going to be going live in Watersmeet, Crystal Falls, Escanaba, and we're also working with Chatham.
And what
Chatham
time frame is that?
Within the next month.
Next month.
Yeah, so, and then beyond that, we've prioritized a lot of the areas along that are near US-2, mm-hmm. along the broadband, and out west, we've been talking with Gogebic and Ironwood area on their needs out in that region. So
Kingsford as well.
So it's really trying to reach across both east-west of the UP and down the central core and build out from there. And some of it's just based off of outright need that we've been hearing to try to address those as fast as we possibly can.
Okay. Do you see any obstacles right now to some communities out there?
The biggest obstacle will be is ensuring we can get the backhaul to that area. Other than that, I don't see a lot of serious issues on trying to get to there. We're pretty confident on what we're going to be able to do.
It's going to be exciting to watch it. We've been talking about the Educational Access Network with NMU Vice President of Finance and Administration Gavin Leach and Extended Learning Community Engagement Vice President Steve Vandenhoven. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on MediaMeet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.